FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
For KKFI, provided by the 40th Annual Ethnic Enrichment Festival.
Good morning.
Friday Welcome through Sunday, August 16th, 17th, and 18th in Swope Park, featuring food, music, dance, and crafts from more than 65 countries, as well as cultural information and hands-on.
Good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. I had a little bit of a technical difficulty. Today, we are continuing our conversation on crime, and we have Captain Jeffrey Hughley, who is the assistant division commander at East Patrol, and Trina Miller, who is a social worker at East Patrol. Good morning, Trina. Good morning, Captain Jeffries. Welcome to Cowtown Conversation.
Good morning.
So, a little bit before we get started, last week we opened with some different stats. This week we're going to open with some other different stats. Right now, year to date, we have 87 murders in Kansas City. That's 9 ahead of 2018. 300 people have been shot. We are looking at, of those who have been murdered, 25 to 34-year-olds lead that, and they're 34% of the murder victims. But the suspects in those particular murders, 27% of those are between 17 and 24. Handguns have been used in 57 out of 87 murders in 2019. But here's the most surprising stat. East Patrol leads the city with 34 murders. Metro Patrol has 29 murders. Central Patrol has 16 murders. North Patrol, South Patrol, and Shoal Creek only have 6 murders between them. So the most violent crime in the city is only happening in 3 of the city's 6 patrol divisions. So that's something. We see a pattern, maybe that's something we need to look at and begin to start looking and talking about. And I know crime is one thing that's on everybody's mind because it seems like it's in the forefront, not just in Kansas City, but in the nation. So we all have to get involved to take a bite out of crime. Captain Hughley, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how long you've been a police officer, places you may have served?
Absolutely. So as Joe mentioned, I'm Captain Jeffrey Hughley. I currently I'm assigned to the East Patrol Division on our day shift. But prior to that, I started as officer in Central Patrol. So I worked there for a couple of years, and I went to our Narcotics and Vice Division as a detective for a few years. I got promoted out of there, and I went to Metro Patrol as a sergeant and then bounced around to a few other divisions until I worked at headquarters prior to being promoted again to a captain. I'm at East Patrol. So the three divisions that you mentioned, I've actually worked at all three inner city stations before as a officer, sergeant, and now captain. So I've bounced around a little bit and got a little experience in those three areas.
That's going to be definitely a copy for discussion a little bit later. So how long have you been a police officer?
I've been on the police department for just over 14 years.
Okay, so you're not new to the you're not new to the game. You've been in the game for a little bit, fighting a battle.
Absolutely.
So, interesting question. What made you want to become a police officer? Because right now, I know you all having difficulty hiring, but there's the one job that really nobody seems... We'll talk about the police, but when we really need the police, then we'll actually call the police.
Right.
Nobody wants to be an officer.
I get it. I'm born and raised in Kansas City. So I wanted to do something. You always hear, I want to help people, or I did this to help people, but what does that really mean? So I wanted to, you mentioned those stats there, I wanted to make a difference and be a representative to people from my community that look like me, whether you black, brown, female, or any other minority class, that you can do this job and you can do it successfully and you can be promoted throughout this job. And it's been very, very rewarding. I knew that I wasn't in this for the money. You know, I do it for the outcome, not so much the income. None of us are rich, as you know. But I wanted, and even now, every speaking opportunity I get to go talk to youth or to a youth group or to a college, I do that and let them know that you can be me, you can do this. Or even throughout my fraternity, I'm with, I do a lot of outreach through them as well. So I'm passionate about what I do, and I look forward to doing more.
So now we have Ms. Trina Miller, who's a social worker with at East Patrol. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Much like the captain, I got into this for just to change lives and to make a difference in the community. This is my 21st year doing social services. So I love East Patrol. I love the community. I love the individuals that are in the community. It's interesting every single day when I go out. You never know what you're going to come up with, what challenges and barriers. So I really, really enjoy this position. And
so where are the places have you worked at other than the police department being a social worker?
I came from Truman Medical Center. I was on the crisis team, and I worked over there for 10 years. And prior to that, I worked at Tri-County Mental Health up north, and I was there for 10 years. So I've always worked in some capacity of social services.
So you, like Captain Jeffries, you've been on both sides of the trauma line. Because Truman sees everything.
Absolutely.
The worst that the city has to bear will end up in some place of form or fashion of Truman. And then when you talk about Tri-County, how much of this, what we're looking at going on within crime, is a mental health aspect, a mental health issue?
I think a pretty good amount of it is mental health related. One of the interesting aspects of my position is a lot of times when the officers go out to a call, they can answer the call, and it's kind of like a patch. With us coming in, with the social services coming on board, we can actually follow up on those families and make sure that they're linked to the services they need, much like mental health or substance abuse. Homelessness is a big issue. So we can kind of extend the officer's first contact.
So in other words, it goes back to hospital military medicine triage. The officers come there first. They do the immediate triage to either calm the situation or handle what it needs to handle to get that event that made the call go in. But then you all follow up to ensure that hopefully you can get a permanent patch to it, not just a temporary solution when the officer comes there, so that it's more of a long-term lasting situation.
Absolutely. All of our referrals come from law enforcement, so I think that that is just a reflection on the compassion that the law enforcement officers have, because we get the referrals from them, so they care enough to say, hey, I met with this family, this individual, here's some barriers or some challenges that I recognize, could you follow up with them? So we only get our work basically from the officers that are out there on the street doing the job.
So those that are on the front lines are the ones who report to you all and help you all?
Yes.
So that they can have one less call, might possibly have to go back to that particular address, because I know in some cases it's a cycle. They go tonight, then that calms it down for maybe a day or two, but then they're right back. But what you all are doing is working as that permanent solution, so the officers won't have to go back to that.
Correct, yep.
So, Captain Hughley, what are some of the factors that influence crime in East Patrol sector?
Some of the factors. I think the elephant in the room would be some of the social issues in East Patrol Division. We have a influx of homeless there, and another kind of I think where more investment can go in. So it's kind of like, we'll get to it later in the program, our RTM program, kind of, so what about the environment attributes to crime? And I think we're learning that, and we're looking at that over in East Patrol Division as well as department as a whole. But I would definitely say it's been a societal issue that's been accepted and almost become the norm, which we need to change and work backwards towards. But I would definitely say one thing to alter that would definitely be kind of capital improvement and more investments in those areas. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners out there who've been in different parts of East Patrol or different parts of the city where gentrification has occurred, they've noticed crime starts to decrease. So I commend the city, obviously, for their efforts of investment that they're doing and encouraging them to continue doing that.
So we know what's the top crime in East Patrol, because my question is, what are the top three crimes that occur in East Patrol? We know murder's number one.
Right.
But what would be the second and third crime that occur most in East Patrol?
I would say the second and third crime, aggravated assault is a symptom of murder. It's just all of our aggravated assaults, the individuals didn't die or the injuries are non-life-threatening. So I would say aggravated assaults are number two. And surprisingly, I would say behind that would probably be our property crimes, our victim crimes, where that have really affect people more personally than some of the violent stuff. So, you know, the stolen autos, the burglaries, the petty thefts, a lot of that where people take those very personal, they're also pretty high in the East Patrol Division.
As I said earlier, that there's a certain age group that is committing the majority of murders within their city. But is there a certain age group that is committing the majority of crimes within Kansas City and East Patrol?
Not that I have the data for. Off the top of my head, it's what I can recall, it's a wide range of age, race, sex, gender. It's not one particular race that I can think of. As of late, it's been just a wide variety of individuals involved in crime. Unless, I mean, you have the data there. I don't have the data in front of me.
No, I pulled up some things, but I know it's like crime, unfortunately, in Kansas City happens so quickly that it can't get updated as quickly as a crime occurs. So what I've looked at is really just a couple of days old is what we find. And then we were at 85 murders, but now we're at 87 year-to-date. And then 79 of those murders, as I said earlier, East Patrol 34, Metro Patrol 29, Central Patrol 16, 93% of the murders in Kansas City occurred in three of our patrol divisions. What factors make those areas more prone to violence versus just six motors total for Shoal Creek, North Patrol, and South Patrol?
I really don't have an answer for that one. I would say Kansas City is a very transient environment to where it's so landmass. Kansas City is very large. I think we're the fifth largest city in the country.
319 square miles.
But I would say our developed or our populated or our heavy urban populated areas are smaller, and individuals are more transient through those actual environments and their crime opportunity. So they may see the individual they have whatever beef with in one particular zone, but we're there or the moment's not right versus they may catch them alone somewhere else. So I think it's a very transient environment in Kansas City, so it's hard to point to what particular factors in what particular zone contributes to the increase in violence.
And I know that last year, the last warm day that we had last year, I was outside painting until 10 o'clock at night because the temperature was above 60.
Right.
And I heard over six different episodes of gunfire. One of them had turned out to be the drive-by that was down there at the corner of that was 31st Street in Jackson. Mm-hmm. But that drive-by was a result of something that happened off of 27th Street, where somebody came and shot at that one. So in some cases, it seemed like crime breeds crime because of retaliation and factors. So you shot at me, so now I'm going to go back and shoot at you or shoot at your family.
And I think a contributing factor, and a lot of people may not want to hear it or may not disagree with it, I would say the use of social media. Because I would say when you and we were younger, we had a fight in the playground. You know, people may hear about it, they may not hear about it, or if you were at school that day versus now, everything is live streamed. So it's kind of that pride, that ego comes in. So where now only 10 people who were at the skating ring or whatever knew about the fight, it's like now, you know, 50,000 people know about it. So they're looking for you to respond. So technology has definitely helped things go faster, and it hasn't been our biggest advocate in solving some of the youth violence you kind of pointed out earlier between the younger age range involved in violence?
And then that pressure from social media, because now your friends are direct messaging you saying you're gonna let him do you like that on social media,
right?
Are you gonna, you know, what you gonna do? And then that drives a person that could have decided, I'm gonna say, not retaliation to it, but now that drives retaliation, and then that retaliation drives retaliation. So now we're stuck in a cycle that unfortunately may not end until somebody's actually dead.
Right. So we just need to figure out, how do we interrupt that cycle, and how do we intervene? I know there's all sorts of prevention programs out there, but how do we get to that intervention level to disrupt that cycle of violence throughout the urban core, the three divisions you mentioned? That's kind of that's the question of every day. You know, how do we intervene? How do we interrupt that cycle?
And then a true example of what we just talked about is what happened in the Crossroads.
Correct.
Individual got into a fight with somebody else. As he was running away, pulled out his handgun that he shouldn't have because he was only 18 years old, fired, emptied the clip into the air, and killed an innocent bystander.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's sometimes people say it's not the gun that killed, but it's the person behind the gun. But when you have a situation where the person who had the gun shouldn't have had the gun, and there was no direct threat to him, so now he's sitting in jail on a second-degree murder charge, mm-hmm. and he's 18 years old. He's going to spend the next 30 years of his life in prison for something that, when we were kids, we fought, we both walked away, and it was a done deal.
Right, you moved on.
So I have to agree with you that, you know, social media in some cases may be a good thing, allows us to check in on friends and family, but in the same token, that good thing can be used for something that's not so good.
Right.
Majority of murders in Kansas City occur by firearm. As we talked about earlier at the top of the hour, 57 of the 87 murders have been by firearm. But many of these weapons are bought by straw purchasers. Can you explain to our listeners what is a straw purchaser?
Okay, so a straw purchaser. So the last question, you kind of alluded to the fact that he was 18, so he can't go into any of our local gun stores and purchase it. So what a straw purchaser is, so if I'm prohibited from having a firearm due to a felony conviction or previous domestic violence convictions, or I'm on an ex parte or some other court order that prohibits me from having a firearm, then I go pay another individual. We'll just say, hey, I go pay Jack $500 to go buy me a firearm. So Jack goes to whatever local store to buy one, and then he in turn sells it, gives it back to me. So he's the go-between for firearm deals, for giving them to individuals who are prohibited from owning or purchasing one themselves.
So now that straw purchaser, Jack, can he be prosecuted for a crime for giving that gun to somebody else?
Absolutely. That is a federal violation crime that I know our ATF prosecutes quite often. So it happens more than we would like it to happen, but it does occur.
So what happens in the case of, because you all active work on now, the 18-year-old who had the gun,
right?
He could maybe get a couple of years off of his sentence if he then tells in turn who he purchased the gun from, so that then gives you all a trace to be able to go back to find the person that sold, who that put that gun into the hands of an 18-year-old. That may be a bigger, wider network than we're looking at right now.
Yeah, I would say any information that we can solicit or gather from any investigation always goes towards decreasing potentially that next crime, because in my time in the narcotics division, ATF was part of one of our task force, and that was something that I noticed, that some of our crimes of violence involve straw purchasers buying guns for individuals who couldn't buy them themselves.
What percentage of straw purchases are you able to convict each year? Because I know that if we have those who are 17 to 24 committing 27% of the murders, only half of that age range is able to buy a gun. So do we have a lot of convictions for straw purchasers in Kansas City?
I don't want to speculate without having the data. I know there are cases prosecuted. That may be something you can probably get from the Western District of Missouri through an open workers request of some sort. I want to that's stats or data, but that's nothing that I have currently at this time, and don't want to misquote a number, you know, out there.
No, I understand. So, Kansas City Police Department is starting a new system to fight crime called risk terrain modeling. What is risk terrain modeling, Captain Hughley?
So, risk terrain modeling, in the short of things, it's a risk-based policing strategy. So what that risk terrain is, so what about the terrain? What about this area increase our risk here? So it's a, I don't want to say partnership because, you know, we're all part of the city of Kansas City, but it's a new way or a new technique to where the police department, the health department, KCATA, codes, regulated industry, and even involving the community have come together to see in these different environments that you mentioned what potentially attracts crime here. Is it the laundromat? Is it the gas station? Is it the liquor store? Is it the rental properties? Like, what contributes to that? And so once that's determined, you know, we go to, say if it's a gas station / liquor store, we go to that particular location to solicit or gather them getting on board to be like, hey, we're having a big problem with people hanging out in your parking lot drinking. As you know, it's a city ordinance too for them to drink on the same place that they purchased the alcohol. So if you're in agreement with us, do you mind signing for trespassing, or do you mind putting a no trespassing sign up? Or if they're not in compliance with regulated industry, we show up to support them to be like, to kind of give them the information, that way regulated industries can follow up. So that way it's not so siloed. So because before everybody had their own lane, but now it's like we're breaking down and tearing down those silos to work together to solve the problem, because it's not just a police problem, it's a community problem, it's a us problem. So we're trying to all solve it together by looking at the terrain and looking at stats and data to kind of figure out what's causing the why in the area.
And I know a lot of people are hesitant to get involved, but also these businesses get their license from the city. So without that license, these businesses don't work. And I've served on a variety of communities committees, and they'll still serve on a few more, to where we had to get to the business officers because the city also has a nuisance business ordinance. Mm-hmm. So that the police department is called to a location, I want to say it's more than five times in, I want to say 30 days, then that business can be cited for as a nuisance business. And we had to do that with the Good Stop store located at 27th in Indiana. I mean, there was a shooting, a robbery, a murder, a rape, and a couple other things. And we worked with the police department to get the data. But then we had a conversation, and when we first had a conversation with the store owner, he wasn't too helpful. But when we said, so then we contacted the city's business department, and then when he found out that he could lose his business license, mm-hmm. he became a lot more cooperative. We saw the off-duty sheriff there. We saw people cleaning up every day. We saw increased lighting. We saw signage. So sometimes when the community comes to you and says, we're trying to work with you, but in certain situations, you may have to take that next step, which is what we had to do, but we did get the desired outcome that we wanted. You know, the crime at that location went down mm-hmm. dramatically. So that is a way that, you know, if you're in Center Patrol Zone, Metro, East Patrol, that you have those nuisance businesses or nuisance houses, because that same ordinance works with rental homes,
you're right.
Unfortunately, you know, other properties, because we all want to live in a safe neighborhood. We want to be able to come home, raise our children, you know.
Right, and that's part of it, too. So some of the rental properties are some of the dilapidated properties. I know with our CIO in some of these areas or all throughout East Patrol Division, they're all SEPTET trained. Or another asset is that, you know, I've been to a couple community groups to educate the neighborhood associations on. So the Western District, the Western Missouri, Legal Aid in Western Missouri, they actually help some of these organized and recognized neighborhood association groups take those dilapidated properties that are just sitting there abandoned, and then they'll be able to rehab them and resell them, or they'll be able to rehab them and purpose them for the neighborhood. So getting that education out there in those areas is also a critical part of the RTM by helping them organize and come together, because a strong neighborhood crime is typically lower in those areas or a strong community group.
So how is RTM risk train modeling different? Previously, I think we had community-based policing. How does it differ from community-based policing?
So community-based policing, that's essentially just an effort to work with and alongside the community and build those relationships and those bonds. But what it didn't do, the community policing, it didn't assess the different risk of the terrain. It didn't assess, like you said, the businesses or the houses or whatever was increase in crime in that area. It didn't pull the data in for that, and as well as bring in these outside city entities on board. It was just strictly focused on, let's work with the community, let's be a part of the community, even dating back to the 70s where you had the Kansas City street cop, the beat walk, and then the hot spots and all these other things that worked with the community on decreasing crime but increasing a relationship. This actually assesses the whole terrain on, okay, what are our contributing factors and how do we decrease them, and then what other resources can we bring on board, kind of leading into even Trina here's social work program. Although she's not a part of the risk terrain, she's something that helps us do our job.
Risk terrain modeling is used in 45 countries across 6 continents around the world. 35 cities in the United States that use risk terrain modeling have seen a 30% decrease in crime. How is the risk terrain model working here in Kansas City?
It's working. I can definitely say for East Patrol, I'm not knowledgeable in the other areas, but from what I hear, it's working there also. Because I know in East Patrol, one particular intersection we started with, we had a lot of problems, a lot of drinking in public, a lot of trespassing, a lot of hanging out. So we went and got those businesses on board. We got the city public works on board. And so we picked up the trash, cleaned up the neighborhood, got the businesses to post no trespassing sign, as well as even talking to them about the different liquor ordinances. And that neighborhood has done a 180. I mean, we've gotten letters, we've gotten emails, we've gotten phone calls from those residents over there just immediately recognizing the change and thanking us. So I can definitely say it works, and it has been working. I'm looking forward for it continuing to work. And you brought up the one example yourself there, 270 Indiana. Although it wasn't official yet, that's the same type of process where we bring in regulated industries, and they have to go to a nuisance business. And so, as I stated earlier, money changes things. Although it wasn't an investment of money, it was the potential of losing money in that case, to where he came on board to change what was attracting the people or what was causing the crime in the area. And we haven't had problems at our location since.
You know, like I say, when I say it's quieted down, it went from a lion to a mouse.
Yes, absolutely.
So what risk terrain modeling identifies the elements that attract crime. How does this help predict crime?
So to predict the crime, it's a database. So it's map-based. So we pull all our CAD data, we pull all our report data, and we look at everything that adds to crime in that area, and we overlay it all. So after we overlay that data, we look at the different businesses, or say like this one particular corner, it's a hot spot. Okay, what's there? Oh, there's a laundromat here. Oh, there's a gas station here. There's a liquor store, or it's full of rental houses. So after we overlay our crime data over a terrain map, that kind of tells us, okay, these particular things, are they leading to crime in the area, or is it coincidental? And then so from there, we start our assessment.
So you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today we'll continue our discussion about crime in the Kansas City metropolitan area. And our guests are Ms. Trina Miller, who's a social worker with the East Patrol, and Captain Jeffrey Hughley, who is the assistant division commander of East Patrol. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guests are from East Patrol, Ms. Trina Miller, who's a social worker there, and Captain Jeffrey Hughley, who's the assistant division commander. So we would finishing up with risk terrain modeling. Risk terrain modeling removes the focus from the people and in turn steers it to the places where the crimes are committed. Does this lead to better use of limited police resources?
Absolutely. Because sometimes with the businesses, it's a simple fix. Like we may go to it and be like, hey, if you add lighting on this side of the parking lot, you maybe put a camera up, I think the problem you're having here, it'd be gone. Because typically what we find is people do things in the dark that they really don't do in the light. So if we find, you know, we have them add cameras, put lighting, then it stops the theft from there. It stops the vandalism, or it stops the potential crime for occurring, because most criminals don't want to be caught. So they do things under concealment or under darkness. So if we get the businesses to change those few factors, then it mitigates our involvement and we can be used better different places.
So rich terrain remodeling has been proven to promote and improve community relations. How does it do that?
So it does that twofold, because before we even started this in East Patrol Division, we actually went out to the different neighborhood groups, and even with the so there's CID on Independence Avenue. We even invited some of the businesses there and told them it was no secret. We told them what it was, why we were doing it. So we wanted to get their involvement and their buy-in from the ground base level. So we told them how they can help, how they can spread the word out, their part in it. We told the businesses, we're coming. You know, if you guys aren't up to code, or you're not doing things the way you should be doing legally, so make sure you got all your license, make sure you got all your permits, all that stuff. So we're putting their information out there. So if we do have to come, it's no surprise for the businesses, and then the neighborhood groups can feed us real lifetime information, or even do the changes that they can do themselves to improve their areas. So, and other than that, I would say it's been a big success.
So, what have we learned from RTM in Kansas City?
So what we've learned is a lot of stuff is data driven, and the problem areas now have been problem areas for a while. We just have an actual accurate way of learning what has contributed to the problems, and then coming up with solutions to eliminate those problems.
So how has adding the social worker component to East Patrol helped officers, but also helped reduce crime?
Oh my, it's been a tremendous help. Because before, I would say prior to Trina, I mean, she gets a lot of this credit, but so we have six of them, but I'll let her explain all that. But prior to having social workers come on board, we get called for everything, and a lot of our calls aren't really police problems. Sometimes we're counselors, sometimes we're mediators, sometimes we're the social workers. So having them involved in the non-police problems helps us actually deal with those problems where we need it to be in, and we can refer everything else over to Trina or one of her colleagues.
We've got a caller on the line. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for?
My name is Steve, and I'm calling from South Kansas City. And I saw a news report last night about an incident in Canada where two men were being hunted, and they had surveillance video or cameras apparently set up in a retail location that captured these individuals, and it was remarkably clear. The images were just as if they were filmed with a quality camera. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how much of a concern is it that the cameras that are out there don't show enough detail or identify people well enough, and what could be done about that?
Well, surprisingly, I know a lot of the newer businesses going in, or a lot of the places we deal in East Patrol or throughout the city, everything's DVR or digital recorded based. So most of the video that we deal with, it's all high def. Even some of it's 4K video, or even to take it a step further, there's all sort of video doorbells that people can buy, and those videos are pretty good as well. And I know one particular company has it's like a neighborhood app where people can upload their videos in there if crime occurs in the area, and it works. I mean, we use it on a daily basis.
I guess maybe what I've seen is video pictures published in the newspaper, and they always seem pretty fuzzy. And maybe it's just a part of the process of getting it on the printed page or something.
Yeah, well, you have to consider the printing and the reprinting and the pixelation of blowing up that actual image, taking it
right
from there.
So if that could be remedied somehow, perhaps more people could be involved in identifying individuals that they recognize as possible.
Oh, yeah, but that all comes at a cost. I mean, technology, it's not really supply and demand. It's necessary now, so I think the companies know it's needed, so they're proud of their product, and that price point for that clear imagery, it's expensive.
Well, it appears that no expense is too great. Otherwise, things will continue to get out of hand.
I agree. But
well, thanks for your show.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
So if you've got a call, give us a call on the studio on 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So can you briefly talk a little bit about the Ring doorbell system? You were alluding to that.
So the Ring doorbell system, I know a lot of you all have heard of the Ring company. There's several others out there, but there is a neighborhood crime watch app to where if you can subscribe or opt into that actual app, and if something happens in your area, you can upload that video and share it through all your neighbors. That way, if somebody kicks your front door open, and also as a police department, there's a program that we have that you can sign up through us to share the video with us. That way, say if someone kicks in your front door, you can immediately share that out to your neighbors and be on the lookout for this individual. And a lot of times, somebody will recognize them, and it helps us apprehend them or identify them to keep them from breaking into your neighbors or the next community over residents.
So we've got a caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for Captain Hughley or our social worker, Ms. Tran Miller?
My name's Kurt. I'm from the east side. And I think it's so wonderful that the police are finally going after the business community. I think our president has showed us that there is so much racism in America that we can elect an out-and-out racist. And in my experience, I've had a lot to do with wealthy people. And it's just endemic. The wealthier you are, the more the jokes, the more the put-downs, the Trumpisms, the dog whistles and all that sort of stuff. And I think that, you know, you talk about statistics. You know, the war against black and brown community, it's coming from everywhere. And the unemployment, the poverty, and the police department, the officials have said, we cannot police ourselves out of this problem. So I think working with the business community, getting them to cut back on the racism, that will be a major thing. I mean, I think I heard a women's program saying that there's a city that's going to, or maybe it was in the presidential campaign, if for every percentage point that the executives in the community aren't women, or the employees of a business aren't going to be women, they're going to fine them 1% of their profits or something like that. Now, this is never going to go anywhere, but as soon as we start employing black and brown people in the way that they're represented in the community, and not just at the bottom levels, but throughout the companies, I think that would turn this country around. Now, I may be just a dreamer, but thanks a lot for listening.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for your call.
Thank you for your call, Kurt.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. So, Trina, what are some of the primary functions of the social workers assigned to patrol divisions?
Our basic mission is to just extend upon the initial call that got the officers there, to maybe close the gaps between why the officers are responding, get those calls for service down. We work a lot with, as the captain had mentioned, the homeless population in the east side, and just trying to get those individuals identified, build a rapport with them, find out what their barriers are, and get them back into a functioning member of society.
What are some of the most important skills needed by social workers who are being assigned to police departments?
Compassion. Absolutely compassion. We run across a variety of individuals every day that have different needs and struggles, and to be able to stop, see that person as an individual, look at them, not judge them, and go above and beyond to try to help that person get through the struggles that they're initially dealing with and get them back to where they're over that trauma or that incident, that's significant for us to have.
And I'll even add that to that, take it a step further. One thing that in East Patrol and all my divisions, all the places I've been, one of my first conversations with my subordinate staffs is that there's two things I want you guys to go out there and police with, and that's empathy and perspective. Empathy of being able to put yourself in that position, understand that what it feel like, you know, if you were approached that certain way or if you were judged that certain way, or for some of you all, it wasn't that long ago where you potentially could have been in that position. And perspective is just understanding, or the same way, just if you were there, what would your perspective be of police? So those are two things definitely that I think is needed for policing.
So we've got a call on line one. Rich, can you tell us
guess
what part of town you're calling from and what your question is?
It's calling from Overland Park.
Yes.
How do you explain the big difference in crime between black and white neighborhoods?
We really don't track the data based on race. We track the data based on crime. Because a lot of our crime, at least in East Patrol, with me currently being there, involves black and white individuals. Not to get into kind of the media, the portrayal, anything like that. We're all just factual and data-based.
Is it true or is it not true that it is dangerous for a white person to go into a black neighborhood?
No, that's not true. I mean, because I'll do this. I challenge you to drive through some of the areas, and you see that Kansas City, a lot of the urban areas, are truly a melting pot. I mean, we have black, we have white, we have Condoleezze, we have Sudanese, we have Burmese. They're in the East Patrol division. This is all East Patrol. It's Hispanic, and they're all intermingled within the same neighborhood. So, no, we're definitely a melting pot in East Patrol as well as Kansas City. So I wouldn't fall into kind of that myth there that, you know, one place is dangerous over the other, because as we all know, crime occurs everywhere.
Okay, another question, and I hope you take these questions as questions, not as prejudices.
Oh, no, absolutely, no, go ahead.
Okay, do you think that because of the current administration in the White House, that you are having more trouble having cooperation between police and non-police?
We're a nonpartisan, non-discriminatory organization, and I would say this because I've been in Kansas City all my life, and crime has always been here. So I don't think here in Kansas City we've had an increase of one particular crime over another. Our mission or our objective is how do we decrease all crime, and you know, with our social work, since she's here today, how do we get these individuals resources to change and alter their lives from potentially be victimized or participating in crime just be as a means of survival.
Okay. Recently, a police officer was observed helping an ICE officer doing a what I'd call a kind of unlawful break into a car.
Mm-hmm.
What's your comment on that?
So I would say, I know we put out a message on that, but so by states, I will tell you this. So by state statute, we must support anybody that calls us. So whether if it's you, whether it's local, whether it's state, tribal, or federal law enforcement, we have to support them. And even, say, with our federal partners, it's written within all of our MOAs, MOUs, and everything that, again, we will support them. So with that particular incident, not take up too much time, we came to support them, and then, you know, you all seen the video from everything else.
So I want to say thank you, Rich. We've got another caller calling on in. So thank you for being, appreciate you for being a listener, and
Stay tuned. We're going to continue this conversation over the next 3 weeks. So, caller, can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for our experts from East Patrol here?
Hello?
Hello, yes. Can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question
North Kansas
is?
Kansas City, Larry.
Yes, Larry, go ahead. Can you tell us what your...
Well, we have crime and criminals everywhere, including in the White House. I think the president is a criminal. Here's a man that is a supposedly billionaire with all kinds of money and influence, and it would seem to me he would like to empty the country of all black and brown people. Here's a country that romanticizes the mafia, making movies about it. We live in a state where they memorialize Jesse James, a bank robber. So it depends on your point of view. Basically, we're motivated by two strong powers, and that is pain and pleasure. Everybody's seeking pleasure and trying to avoid pain. But if you're living in a racist society like we are, it's difficult to manipulate and to live in a society like that that looks down on people of color. So this crime thing is a much more complex thing than we talk about. We're talking about, for the most part, black communities are policed. If you live in a white community, they're not policing you. You're their neighbor. They're not looking to lock you up. All kinds of crime is going on constantly. But the people that are policed, and those are the people in the so-called ghetto, those are the people that are being arrested. Everybody else is, operating like normal because nobody's watching them. That's the bottom line. When we stop romanticizing criminals like the mafia and like Jesse James, the famous bank robber, when we take the racism out of it, then it has a whole new development there. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
So, caller, can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for our experts from East Patrol? Caller?
Hello?
Hello, yes. Can you tell us can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for our East Patrol experts?
Yeah, my name's Nathan. I'm in Shawnee.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. We're here.
Hello? Hello? Guess he went through, was going through a bad zone. Lost him. Give us a call back, caller. So, where are some of the people in Kansas City suffer from mental health problems? How can having the social workers involved in the police situation help those trained?
I think having us on board at the divisions, when we can go out with the officers and identify those needs, we can take the resources that we have and link those individuals and make sure that they get connected with the services they need. Many people that suffer from mental illness in Kansas City, they might not be knowledgeable of the resources that are out there for them or how to like navigate through them as simple as like how to get an appointment, or they might not have a cell phone to where they can call and make an appointment. Transportation's a big issue. So we can kind of assist the individuals with setting stuff up for them, you know, making sure that they walk through that process and get connected with what they need. So that's a huge piece of what I see every day.
One of the goals of the social worker program is to support youth who've been identified due to past police contact. How's this aspect of the program working?
I think we're really spearheading this. The youth piece, we're still developing. I kind of see when I go out to the homes, I start with the parents, identify what's going on with the parents. A lot of times, I think some of this is generational, where they don't feel that they have an opportunity to get out of the lifestyle that they're in. And again, we can bring in resources to say, hey, look, you know, you do have an opportunity to go to college. You do have an opportunity to have a job and maintain a job and have income, and you don't have to rely on crime to get that income. So I think going into the actual home, starting with the home and everybody in the home, is a significant piece in identifying the needs.
How many patrol divisions have social workers? Is it just East Patrol, or do all the six patrol divisions have social workers?
It actually started in Center Patrol, kind of as a pilot program, and it was very successful over there. So Chief Smith has decided to hire one social service provider for each division, and now we're all embedded in we're actually in the police department.
So if someone has an issue and needs a social worker to help them out, but they may not be in East Patrol, so they can call their local patrol division and ask to speak to the social worker there?
Absolutely. And the, all of the girls, we all communicate very well. So even if, you know, I've gotten several from, like, North Zone, so I can just make sure that they get connected with the North Zone social services person. We will make sure that they get to the person that they need.
Okay. So as we close out here, Captain, do you have any other questions or comments that you'd like to leave our listeners with? That, you know, crime doesn't happen in a vacuum, as you all say. Somebody always sees and knows what happened. But how they can get involved in this risk-trained model and help decrease crime in their neighborhoods or communities?
I would challenge as well as encourage all of your listeners, I mean, no matter if you're in Kansas City or not, to organize a neighborhood association or some sort of community group. Get recognized by the state, be recognized by your city, because it's power in that. Because as I stated earlier before, a organized and a strong community, I think its statistics will show us that it decreases crime. So that'll be the biggest thing. And also, I would say just get involved every way you can. And also, don't forget our Crime Stoppers tips. Tip has increased to $25,000. For those of you all know something out there, please call. Please give us that information. I mean, because it's needed.
And you've already paid out your first $25,000 tip, so somebody is
correct.
$25,000 richer. And the great thing about the Crime Stoppers is that you're total anonymity. Nobody knows who
right.
you are. Even when you go to pick up the money, which they give you in cash,
right.
nobody knows exactly. They're not. There's no video cameras. There's no nothing. So it's a great way to take a bite out of crime.
Absolutely.
But also the same important way, get paid for that tip and what you may give.
Yeah, you can do that online. You can do it by text. You can call. And it's not just limited to homicides. If you all know people selling guns who shouldn't be, if you all know felons with guns that shouldn't have them, call us, and then we can get you paid on some of that stuff as well.
So 816-474-TIPS. That's 816-474-TIPS. Trina, any last minute comments before we end out here?
No, thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
So we never end...